It's on Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. 3 years ago, Ferguson, Missouri exploded into national headlines when an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown, was shot and killed by police. Protests erupted in many cities, including Atlanta. And now Charlottesville is just the latest example of heightened racial tensions around the country and perhaps rising violence. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Wesley Lowery covers race and justice for the Washington Post, and his new book is called They Can't Kill Us All, Ferguson, Baltimore, and a New Era in America's Racial Justice Movement. Lowery speaks this week at the Decatur Book Festival and at Emory University. Hi there.
Hey, how are you doing?
It's good to have you with us. I want to start with the subtitle where you book where you call it a new era in America's racial justice movement. What makes you think this is a new era and not a continuation of the civil rights movement that began in the 50s and 60s?
Well, I actually don't see a distinction between those two things, right? It's a new era, meaning a new chapter, a new version. What we obviously have is new people, right? The young activists and demonstrators, the people who took to the streets in Ferguson and Baltimore, are obviously different people than the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. In fact, part of what the book does is it chronicles the question of who are these folks leading many of these demonstrations? Who are the young men and women who are so moved by what they saw as an injustice in Ferguson that they sacrificed their own physical bodies as well as, in many cases, their jobs, their educations to take up these kind of lives of activism. And so what we see, I think unquestionably, beginning in the 2000s and in the era that is ushered in by the election of Barack Obama, we do see a distinct era in our conversation nationally about race in America, in part, if only, because that's a conversation happening with a backdrop of a black president. And so the hope here is to chronicle and talk about this kind of period of time stretching back essentially to the election of Barack Obama forward to today.
So one of the things which seems different to me, although I was not around during the first civil rights movement, and neither were you, but it seems...
No, I was not.
It seems we're both a little too young, but it seems there is a growing distrust or an existing distrust of almost everything. Many of the people that the interviews that you recount, the conversations that you recount, show that they at the time they were even speaking with you, they weren't sure whether to trust you. They weren't sure what journalists to trust. They weren't sure what government agencies to trust. How does that then play out during protests?
Of course. Well, what I think is, it's unclear to what extent that distrust always existed or always there, even it manifested in different ways, perhaps. However, what I do think is different about this moment was that people taking to the streets are empowered in a way they never quite were before, and because they can chronicle and document their own causes and their own gatherings themselves in a way that is different, right? And so if you think about Ferguson, Missouri, for example, you had thousands of people in the streets, and then dozens, maybe hundreds of those people who are basically live tweeting everything that's happening. They're taking photos, they're taking videos, they're giving instructions, they're saying, can you believe it? The police just moved us from this street corner to this one, right? So because of that, there was this feeling that they didn't necessarily need, whether it be the media or the other outside arbiters to chronicle what was happening because they felt as if they could do it themselves. I think that there's always this kind of push and pull. We see this often as members of the media, where we show up and we essentially were trying to convince folks to trust us and to talk to us. And the argument we make very often is, well, look, without us, how are you going to tell your story? It's important that this gets out there. What turned that on its head a little bit in recent years has been cell phones and social media, right? That people now more so than ever feel empowered to tell their own stories, which means they hold us and the media to a much higher standard. They're just not going to talk to everyone with a camera or a notebook because they don't have to. If they really want to get something out, they can do it themselves.
But this is one of the issues that comes up through your book, is both the pros and cons of citizen journalism. And I think to a certain extent, Sean King might be an example of this, that there is a difference between the reporting that comes from a journalist and some of this on the ground gut reaction, not always fact checked, not always sourced information that comes from so-called citizen journalists or activists. How does that make a journalist's job more difficult or maybe less?
Well, I think it does both things. I mean, the first is that the more people, I think one of the ways that it makes a journalist's job easier is that the more people you have creating accounts of what they're seeing and talking about, it's a tip sheet. It helps you figure out who you should even be calling, right? That to have someone live tweet something that they just saw, whether later on, I want to go back through the specifics of whether they used all the words they wanted to use, or were they being hyperbolic with something. I at least know who I should call to ask now, as opposed to having to figure out who was there. Right. On the other hand, there is a world in which, because people can publish themselves, there's less of a barrier to entry of that, and so you can very quickly have things go viral, have things become common knowledge or conventional wisdom that may or may not be true, and there is a difficulty there. I think that underscores the importance and the role of journalists in this moment, right? At a time when everyone can publish, when everyone can weigh in, when everyone can in real time document what they say they are seeing and experiencing. It's more important than ever to have people whose job it is to kind of calmly and coolly walk back through behind that and check and see what really matches up and what does not.
Now, you first came to National Headlines because you were arrested. You were arrested while you were working at a McDonald's. What was that like to suddenly become part of a story that you were trying to keep some kind of journalistic objectivity from?
Sure. I mean, I think it was an relatively unpleasant experience, if only because, in the polarized environment we live in now, in the world in which we're all kind of in our own ideological bunker, myself and Ryan Riley at the Huffington Post, we were, both the first of dozens of journalists who ended up being taken into custody at some point in Ferguson. We became these kind of whipping boys or heroes, depending on what exactly your politics were, right? And so we had people to the political right, saying that we had just done this on purpose, got ourselves arrested on purpose. Oh, we had these far right wing bloggers. I think some woman wrote one time that, we were the example of everything wrong with the American man today. Or so, we just became this, these characters to be attacked and beat up on. If you didn't like what was happening in Ferguson, we were the problem, right? And on the other side, you also have some lionization at times that felt either exaggerated or not even necessarily fair or distracting from the story we were attempting to tell. What was fascinating, that was the third or fourth day I was on the ground, there were just so many compelling characters, so many compelling stories, people I'd been interviewing, things that were happening each night, and this focus on us and these arrests at times did detract and did distract from what I think was a larger and more important story, even as it was bringing additional eyeballs to that story.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter Wesley Lowery. He's speaking this week at the Decatur Book Festival and Emory University about his book, They Can't Kill Us All. And that title comes from a protest sign that you saw in Ferguson, does it not?
Yes, it does. It was following the shooting of Antonio Martin, which was a shooting, I want to say it was in December 2014. And so it's after Michael Brown, after Jimmy Powell. And this was a shooting that the police and the elected officials would say was, a quote-unquote good shooting, right? This was someone who was armed with a gun who, on video, it looked like he'd pulled it on the officers. And yet still people showed up. People were still there with signs, demanding answers, demanding accountability. And I think it showed two different things, right? I think that it underscored something that I think has been thematically true of these last few years, and that is that folks are no longer willing to sanitize who they rally around and who they do not, right? It's a world in which people believe that police shootings are happening too often, about three a day in the United States of America, and that there is a skepticism of the police version of stories, no matter what that story is, and there's a demand for accountability and information each time. But beyond that, that sign really struck to me and spoke to me in part because I just thought it was a powerful distillation of what so many of these activists and protesters are talking about, right? This is a book that tries to tell the story of why did so many of these young people step into the street? Who are they? What are their backstories? How did they get here? And the reason that we settled on this sign as the title of this book is because I think it really, if there was one message that the hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people who stepped in the street were attempting to impart during those years. It's that no, there are so many of us, and you cannot keep killing us. This has to stop, right? And I think that it was a powerful message. And so I thought very often as I was writing this book, back to that sign, and that's kind of how we settled on that as the title.
So I hate to do this to you because we only have 1 minute left, but do you think that where we are now with Charlottesville and the other unrest that's going on, was it inevitable? Was there anything that could have been done?
I do think it's inevitable, if only because I think that what we're seeing now in public are tensions that have simmered in private for generations, right? What's different is that we're now talking about things and confronting things in public spaces that previously we would like to pretend did not exist, right? We would kind of politely say, no, well, we've come such a long way, and no, people don't feel that way. When in reality, these types of tensions and these feelings expressed by these kind of white supremacist neo-Nazi groups have always existed in our society. And I think that the reality is the sooner we can confront and name something, the sooner we have a chance of addressing it.
That's Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter Wesley Lowery. He's author of They Can't Kill Us All, Ferguson, Baltimore, and a New Era in America's Racial Justice Movement. Wesley speaks this week at the Decatur Book Festival and at Emory University. You can get details at gpbnews.org. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.